Genesis Trust, a non-profit, non-political, and non-sectarian organization on the roster of the Economic and Social Council of the United Nations, and concerned with the establishment of world cooperation and goodwill, presents Inner Sight with your host, Robert Anderson. He, with Sarah and Dale McKechnie, President and Vice President of Lucis Trust, will discuss philosophical and spiritual topics essential to everyday life. Now here's your host, Robert Anderson.
Welcome. Inner sight is simply seeing that which is always present, but not yet fully recognized. You have, within you, the ability to see yourself and the world around you in a new way, with new eyes. So, stay with us and, together, we'll look at the world and ourselves with inner sight. Our topic for today, life, consciousness, form. And before we get started on this topic, I'd like to give some credit to Alice Bailey, the founder of the Lucis Trust organization, who wrote 24 volumes of literature. And the main inspiration for the dialogue that you hear on the show comes from the works of Alice Bailey. As does the following thought: there is naught but energy, for God is life. Do we have any idea what is really meant by life?
I don't think so, because I would say that's the profound question that we deal with as human beings, isn't it? We know that we live, but we don't know what it means to really be alive. We don't know if there is life beyond the world of form. It's still really a deep mystery to us, in spite of all the progress that science has made in the past century. I think science and religion have really merged in their findings, in the sense that the study of matter has brought the scientists to a recognition that something lies behind matter and is veiled by it, encapsulated in it. Maybe we could call that life, but we really don't know the extent of it or the significance of it. It's the main question that we deal with in terms of trying to understand why we are born and why we die, and whether anything lasts after the death of the body. In fact, the Bhagavad Gita, which is an ancient Hindu scripture, declares, "Know thou that there never was a time when I, nor thou, nor any of these princes of earth was not, nor shall there ever come a time when any of us shall cease to be." I think that belief is deeply anchored in the human heart, but we don't really know what it means.
Well, I think of life as something quite apart from form. I think today the concept of life and form are so close together that there seems to be, particularly in the field of biology and in certain fields of psychology, that life arises out of form, whether it be the form of a human being or the form of a single cell or of the form of an atom of substance. I think there is a essence or an electrical essence, an electrical energy that kind of defines life. At least it does to me. I see it as something quite apart and not really separate from, but it is that which animates all forms, whether it be an atom of substance or a single cell or an organ in our body or a plant or an animal or a human being. It's the same one life that animates all forms, including the earth itself.
But doesn't the view that you suggested is more common see life as being preserved by the form, and that if something happens to that form, life ends?
That's the problem, I think. There is this belief that life ends, but
when the form ends.
Yeah. But according to the esoteric teachings, which we study, I mean, there is no really ending to life. Life has no beginning, it has no end, really. I'm talking about pure life, not what we call the form. But as I said, there is no beginning to this life, there is no end. Even at the moment of conception, I think that's when generally the belief is that life begins.
When in fact form begins.
It's a form beginning, the beginning of a form, a tiny...
A body.
Single cell. I mean, life is already present at the moment of conception. It was there before conception because it animates the sperm, it animates the egg, and when the two come together and a process is started, and life simply is passed on from one form to the next. And there is confusion here about that, and I think it's good that this is coming to the surface today, because I think it needs to be aired about this. To me, it's a misconception of life beginning and life ending. Even at death, life doesn't end. It continues on. It just passes out of the body. The body particles disintegrate. But the life principle that animated that body continues on.
In fact, people who have the eyes to see, the capacity to register this, have witnessed the release of light at the death of the body of a human being. Something is what transmuted or transferred into another state. And I suppose that's the indwelling essence that inhabited that body for 80 or 90 years and then is released. So gradually, with exploration of science and with the work of people who study near-death experiences and with the spiritual progress that human beings are making, I think we are coming to an understanding that life inhabits form for a while. The form then releases that life and it is free to take another state, but it doesn't end. There's a wonderful statement from the Ageless Wisdom that says life is one and naught can take or touch that life. Mm-hmm. Life is one and naught can take or touch that life. That to me is an affirmation that no matter what is happening on the outer levels, all is intact, all is enduring.
Mm-hmm. Yes, there is that life essence that is the continuity that underlies all animation in the form. And it holds the form together. It gives life to whatever the form is, whether it's a crystal or a plant or an animal or a human being or the planet itself. It's the same one life that animates everything. And that's why it can't be taken away, it can't be touched.
I suppose it's very fitting that we try to wrestle with this concept on Easter Sunday, because the crucifixion and resurrection of Christ is the declaration of the continuity of life. Christ said, "I am come that ye may have life and life more abundantly." What he meant is not easily understood by those of us who don't have the consciousness of an initiate. But he suggested in his triumph over the death of the body that he endures, and therefore all of us do, all human beings. It's a kind of a guarantee that makes Easter so significant.
Absolutely. And this, I've pondered over this this phrase, you know, life more abundantly, and it's not an easy concept, but, excuse me, I think that Christ comes to, has prepared the way, and he prepared the way by moving closer to a oneness with God. He didn't become God, but he became one with God, and he entered into a more fuller aspect of life, the life of God, so he could express it more vividly, more dynamically in his work. And I think that's what he is giving to the world and what we will try to understand in the future, you know, as the New Age grows on us.
That's, I think, the major next focus of the coming age. We've talked a lot about the age to come and about the different rays. The New Age will be governed by the seventh ray, which is the fusion of spirit and matter, or the fusion of life and form. And that suggests that he enacted 2,000 years ago something that we will now, as a human race, really develop an understanding of. I think we're already seeing signs of this in the response of people to the environment, in the realization of the interrelationship of the web of life on our planet. These are all indications that we are beginning to see that the material realm is meant to be an expression of divinity, not apart from it.
Yes, and that's also bringing forth the idea that God, of God immanent and God transcendent. It's both. God is both a transcendent entity, a being, but he's also the God within. And it's that dual God that I think has to be enunciated more clearly.
Well, the past age has been an emphasis on God transcendent, to the point that the outer material world has been seen as kind of separated from God, a place of evil, of low-level existence, of sin and so on, that we have to escape. And the New Age will be more of an emphasis on God immanent, God within, not only within the human being, but present within all the manifested realm. I think, to me, that's an absolutely thrilling and glorious realization that the world is a place in which divine spirit dwells and should be radiant.
For those people who just tuned in, you're listening to Inner Sight, our topic for today. Life, consciousness, form. And we have a special offer from Lucis Publishing Company today, and that's the book Serving Humanity. It's an Alice Bailey book. Serving Humanity is an inspiring compilation of extracts that will help the reader's understanding of true service and why it's so important to spiritual development. So what you need to do if you want this book, another word on it, I like these compilations. There's a few of them in the Lucis Trust literature, and as I've mentioned before, there are 24 volumes, so they help us a lot to work our way through the Alice Bailey literature. And how they help is that all of the topics are summarized, and it helps us to peruse them very quickly and develop a priority of interest for which topics we want to explore in greater depth in the other books. So it really is quite a guide and an aid to studying the Alice Bailey literature. And it's available for $16. The special offer comes in the form of free shipping and handling, so all you're really paying for is the price of the book. And what you need to do in order to get Serving Humanity is send a check or a money order for $16 to Lucis, L-U-C-I-S, Lucis Publishing Company, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. And just make a little notation that you heard about the offer on Inner Sight. Once again, a check or money order, $16 to Lucis Publishing Company, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. We also appreciate the support that you've given us in the past. Some of you seem to think it's emotional support. Well, that too, but I'm talking about financial support. So let me clarify it, since there are people who are confused about that. We appreciate your financial support. That's what keeps us on the air, and it helps us to do these shows and continue doing them. So thanks for the donations. We really appreciate it a lot. And please send future donations to Lucis Trust, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. And we also have a website where you can key into a lot of information about the Lucis Trust organization. And that website is www.lucistrust.org. And also what a lot of people like to do is they like to listen to the archive library of radio shows on that website, and there are many of them that are archived there for you, and many of our past shows are there. And also, if you get up late one morning and you miss the show, WOR also holds the show, the current show, on its website, and you can get it for about a week and a half after the first airing of a current show, and you can key into the WOR website by keying into www.WOR710.com. Also, if you want to contact us for any reason, get copies of shows or a general package of information that comes for free, by the way. There's a lot of information about Lucis Trust there, about how you can meet with us and join our meditation meetings. Also, keep in mind that it's not a religion. That's one of the frequent questions. I guess the best comment on that is that it's a spiritual philosophy organization where you can meet many different people of a variety of religious backgrounds who seem to have a commonality in discussing some of the topics that we talk about from the Alice Bailey books. So a general package of information or any other reason, 1-866, that's the toll-free number, 1-866-695-8247. That's 1-866-695-8247. The easy way to remember it, 1-866-NY-LUCIS. Think of 1-866, New York, LUCIS, LUCIS, L-U-C-I-S. Life consciousness form. It's an intriguing topic. You really got my wheels spinning as to when life begins. And I think the most profound thing that I see as most interesting is the idea that life begins before physical birth, which is intriguing. Do we want to say more about that part of the discussion?
Well, I think a way to look at it is that the mother gives birth to the soul, which is, for the duration of the life of that body, going to inhabit a human form. But the soul was alive and conscious prior to incarnation, prior to the birth, and will be alive after death.
Yes, the soul provides the continuity, actually. The soul provides a what they call two threads, a life thread and a consciousness thread. And this may be a little technical, but the life that is passed on by God from the source by way of the soul down through into the incarnating soul, there is a continuity of life, and the life thread is anchored in the heart. And the consciousness thread is anchored in the head.
And it's interesting to see how there's this debate over what indicates that a person is truly dead when the body has truly died. Is it brain death or the death of the heart? Mm-hmm. That's referring, I think, to both of those points of anchorage, the life thread in the heart and the consciousness thread in the brain.
Right.
It would seem to suggest that when the heart is finished, you're dead.
Well, that's what it's the soul's choice for the moment of death to cut the cord, it says, or cut the thread, the life thread, and that stops the heart. But the consciousness may still be connected until the consciousness is also severed, the consciousness thread, then there may remain some remedial kind of consciousness there in the body. But at the moment of death, both the life and the consciousness thread are severed, and the person leaves the body, the soul, incarnated soul, leaves the body and returns to the source.
We haven't said a great deal about consciousness, which is another term for the soul. We've talked about life, we've talked about the form. Consciousness is the effect, I guess you could say, the development of the interaction of life and form. And it helps us to understand why there are so many different levels of consciousness in the world. There's the consciousness of the little amoeba or snail or worm. There's the consciousness of the philodendron and of the tiger. There's the consciousness of the human being and of the spiritual master. There are many different levels of consciousness, and it has to do with, as I understand it, the the effectiveness of the form in providing a vehicle for pure spirit or life. And it doesn't mean that only the human being and the master are truly expressing the highest level of consciousness, as I understand it, because each kingdom has its kind of mastery of consciousness, the diamond being an expression of mastership in the mineral kingdom, or radium also being an expression of a high level of consciousness in that kingdom. I've heard it said that the rose and the eucalyptus are both expressions of very advanced consciousness in the vegetable kingdom. I don't know, but the interaction of form and life produces consciousness, awareness, sensitivity.
That's what the soul provides for us. Now, here again, there is, when we speak of consciousness, there is the prevailing opinion today that consciousness seems to emanate from the brain.
Mm.
And I think that is a misperception that should be cleared up.
Well, we hear it constantly.
Yeah, and it's too bad, but we're trying to make it clear that, at least in our opinion and in the opinion of the ageless wisdom, that the brain is simply a receptor. It receives the information from the five senses, and it passes this information on and synthesized by the mind, which is not the brain, but it's a separate sheath altogether that interpenetrates the brain. And all the consciousness is provided by the soul that provides a link with the higher sources of life. So there, because of the soul, there is continuity there between God and man, between the spiritual world and the world of the physical form and the personality life.
It's interesting that this realization of the relationship between spirit and form is an activity of the mind, and yet the mind is also the troublemaker, in the sense that the mind is the cause of the sense of separateness that most human beings have when they regard the world of form and matter as being separate from divinity, separate from spirit, separate from God. And there's been this great cleavage throughout, especially the past 2,000 years, that saw the outer material realm as divorced from God, separate from Him, and in fact evil, sinful. But another aspect of the mind, the higher mind, is the same apparatus that enables the human being to recognize the fusion, the interrelationship of spirit and form. So we have to go to this recognition through the mind, but progressing first of all, I guess, through a sense of separativeness, and then approaching the unity that sees the world as one. I wonder if somebody like Einstein, who came up with his formula E equals MC squared, didn't give us the best summation of life and form that might be available on the scientific level.
Well, it's a very synthetic statement, and from being a very abstract thinker that Einstein was, and most scientists are like that, it is like him that it would come out that he could synthesize.
It's so succinct.
Yes, and that's what the marvel is, that the human mind can even think like that. And so it requires reaching up to the purely intuitive, abstract levels of thought to conceive of the world in those terms.
I suppose quantum physics is responsible for our being able to see matter as living substance, to see it as a vehicle for spirit, and to not just be focused on the outer appearance of the form. That's what enables the world of form to be a veil, in fact, hiding divinity, the fact that we are so attached to our stuff. I've heard it said that our possessions own us, And in a way, it's true, because we don't see them as living expressions of divinity, but simply as things for our separated selves that give us comfort and pleasure. And we want more and more of them. And we don't share them. And we don't see them as vehicles for the beauty of divinity. So this emotional attachment to the material realm is what creates this great veil.
And it's the attachment to the form that is holding back, I think, the expansion of consciousness to see life as energy, as it says in the opening statement. Life, God is energy. And if we can see God in those terms, now that helps to lift the whole concept off the anthropomorphic image that we've created around God as this great being that we can talk to, this kind of this physical being in a way, but God is simply energy, and as we are energy also, we are made of the same energies as God, and that's where man is made in the image of God. It's at that level, the level of energies and forces, that we are the same as God. We are made of the same energies.
I suppose that's where we get the rather New Age recognition, I am God, that some of the more delightful spirits among us have declared.
If they want to think of it that way.
Yes, in a sense. I suppose we could say each of us, we are of God. We are of that substance. Mm-hmm. We are not completely perfected or whole on our own, but we are of that divine substance, as is everything in the natural world. Life consciousness form, seeing this all in its entirety, gives a wholeness and a dimension to life that is, to me, the path of liberation. Otherwise, we stay stuck in matter.
Please take advantage of the special offer from Lucis Trust, and that's the Alice Bailey book, Serving Humanity, which is a compilation of extracts from all 24 books by Alice Bailey. Also, if you'd like to give us a phone call, you certainly may. If you'd like to order a general package of information, which, by the way, is for free, please do so. It'll tell you all about Lucis Trust and give you a lot of answers to those questions that you call up and ask. To order the general package, 1-866-695-8247. Easy way to remember it, 1-866-NY-LUCIS. Think of 1-866-NEW-YORK-LUCIS. And also, please send a check or money order for the Serving Humanity book for $16, to Lucis Publishing Company, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. You've been listening to Inner Sight. Now we would like to close with a world prayer called the Great Invocation. It's a call for light and love and goodwill to flow into the world and into our hearts. Let's listen for a moment to these powerful words.
From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into human minds. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into human hearts. May the coming one return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide all little human wills, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the human race, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth.